ParanormalWarehouse.com, social networking site for fans of the paranormal. Create a profile, upload video, audio, and photographic evidence. Make friends and comment on their findings. Join today for free at ParanormalWarehouse.com.
Hi, this is Dave Rowntree, author of Paranormal Technology, Understanding the Science of Ghost Hunting, lecturer, author, and paranormal researcher. And when you're not busy in the field, do what I do and listen to the Mallard Report.
Hey everybody, it's the Mallard Report.
The opinions expressed on the Mallard Report are those of the hosts and participants and are not intended to and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of any simulcasting radio network or sponsor. All listeners are advised to make their own decision.
That's right, we're live. I hope we're live. Maybe you might be listening to it recorded. I don't know. It's all up to you. I want to thank you for joining us either way. It's the Mallard Report. My guest tonight is David Rowntree, noted author, lecturer, pain in my side. Oh, wait, I didn't say that, did I?
Yeah, backside, right?
Yeah. Where else would it be, right? Hey,
yeah, exactly.
If you're going to be a pain in my backside, it's okay. At least you're not stabbing me with knives like some other people have done, so it could be worse.
Yeah, that's going around right now.
Well,
boy, I have a suggestion, though. This is kind of neat and everything, but the guy who does the disclaimer, he needs to get his head out of the bucket of water when he's talking. Maybe a little high frequency on that voice will help some.
Eh, gotta have some fun. So how are you? I guess I was talking to you in the chat room. I'll tell everybody you're sick, so you can say you're good, but I know you're not. So
yeah, no, man, I've never been this sick from like a disease before. Oh my Lord! I went to bed Thursday night and I got out of bed basically this morning about 11 a.m. And that was to call the doctor and get some real medicine. I had an upper respiratory infection. Still have it, in fact.
I was going to say, you just went to the doctor today. I'm pretty sure you still have it.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. The difference is now I'm taking this antibiotic that's roughly the size of a hand grenade.
Don't forget to pull the pen before you take it, then.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully we'll do something here. Oh, my God. Oh, so what's been going on, Jimmy?
Oh, not a lot. Just been hosting the show every week, trying to get people to listen to it. You know how that goes. I mean,
have you tried paying people? That always worked for me.
I was gonna say you recently decided to stop doing your show, so you have a little extra money. Maybe you could pay some people to listen to my show then.
Oh yeah, yeah. I got paid a wallop at 0% there. Anyway. We had to give it up. And the reason being is because although it was a lot of fun to do, and we hope to one day do something like that again, we just don't have the time right now.
Yeah, you were just telling me about your schedule right before we went live. And
oh, January's booked, man. I got a show, an interview virtually every night. I mean, or I've got something else planned, you know, that night.
So, yeah, you're allowed to have something else planned once in a while.
Well, I mean, some of the stuff is, you know, things that have to be done, like, you know, go buy groceries or stuff like that, you know.
It's pretty bad when you have to pencil that in so you don't forget to do it.
Oh, God, I know. I feel sorry for Tracy because she had to go get groceries this weekend and do the laundry by herself, and I felt awful. I couldn't get out of bed to help her. It was terrible.
She's a great lady, and she'll handle that, and she'll be a solo guest. I'm breaking the trend. I'm getting you by yourself and then her by herself, and I'll bring you back together. I think it's March sometime.
Well, yeah, and I think that's a good way to do it because you'll get to explore, you know, well, everyone knows my idiocy, and but a lot of people, you know, she hasn't done a whole lot of solo interviews, so you'll get to kind of like explore her background and everything, and then when we get together, we can show how it all comes together and makes wonderful things. So.
It is. I mean, I've talked to you both before. I had you both on in last May when you guys were getting ready for the name of that event, Steel Town Symposium. But that was still different. We had Chris Duras on us that night, so it was still different. So it's always fun and exciting. And
oh yeah, because I like time, Chris. We had a lot of fun with Chris over in Western Pennsylvania, in Washington, I guess it was.
Yeah, down South Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that was really not a very pleasant hotel. There was a lot of nasty things there.
Yeah, well, that's how it goes, though. Of course, you know, Western Pennsylvania, always fun. Oh, wait, never mind. I
always
live here.
Fun. It's always fun until someone loses an eye.
That's right. Well, you're from Jersey, and there was a reality show made about your area, so we're not going to go there.
Well, I'm not from New Jersey. Please, please. I'm a southern boy. I'm just living here for the next 5 years. I'm actually born in Virginia and raised and grew up in Florida, so I'm a Florida boy.
Wait, so 5 years and then what? Where are you moving south again?
Yeah, well, our plan is to buy a piece of property in St. Augustine and move down there, open a large metaphysical store, relocate the lab there, and do this full time. And I'll live off my pensions because everyone knows you can't live off the paranormal. And
well, you could if you scammed people. You could probably get away with training people, giving people certificates for being trained in being a ghost hunter.
Well, you know what I might do is I might offer a course through the junior college, just an educational course down there from like St. John's Community College. I may teach a course on like equipment, you know, how to use the equipment, you know, kind of use my book as a textbook and force the students to buy it.
are you still working on an updated version or has that been shelved too?
No, it's not shelved. That's in line. I mean, there's it's become the third book in line now of what's been going on here, because the next book we're going to work on is a book about Tracy and I, and then somehow or another I'm going to be writing an updated version of Paranormal Technology in the background, and then we may be doing a sequel to the Careful What You Wish For book, which is we're looking for a real publisher for. In fact, right now we're submitting inquiries to agents to find a literary agent to do it, because I no longer have the time to promote books. And while I like a certain amount of the self-publishing aspect because it gives you total control, I just don't have the time anymore. I'm squeezing in research. I'm squeezing in radio shows. I'm squeezing in trying to write articles, wanting to work on another book. And, you know, you're only as good as the last thing you wrote. You know, and the last thing I wrote is 2 years old. So time to get Careful What You Wish For out, which is a little different side of Dave Roundtree, and then we'll do the thing where we tell the story about Tracy and her life growing up, dealing with her gift, and then working me into it about midway where we meet and where we go from there and some of the stuff that we did, and then we'll see where it goes from there. But it seems like everybody has an idea for me to write another book about something.
So. Oh, yeah, I've got a few. You want to hear them? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, really. And I've got another book that I'm working on that's called Ghost Experiments, where I'm actually, you know, recording all of the experiments that I've done since 1976. And, you know, you want to talk about some dry material. So I'm going to have to be adding all kinds of ad-lib stuff into this to make it readable. Because it's essentially a book of data, you know. So I'm going to have to put anecdotal stories behind each experiment and try to put some entertainment in it so it's more pleasant to read. Because I started working on it, and I'm going like, no one wants to read this.
Well,
you know?
But then again, somebody might want to pick it up and read about an experiment that you did, something that crossed their mind.
Right.
Like just
the
a
idea,
chapter. Not
the idea is to share what we did so that people can either avoid the stupid mistakes that I made along the way, or they can duplicate it, or they can just have a nice laugh about, you know, some of the things we did. So the idea behind it was to be educational, but I'm going to have to, like, add all kinds of filler into it to make it, you know, more pleasant to read, you know, like some humor and some anecdotal stories and stuff like that, which, of course, there are plenty to go around. I mean, I was talking to somebody the other night, and I said, you know, what was the first show that started the first paranormal craze? Excuse me a minute.
My guest is David Roundtree tonight as he clears his head. I mean,
yeah, I just coughed up a lung there. What was the first TV show that started paranormal popularity on TV?
It's one of my favorite shows still, Scooby-Doo.
No. Nice try. But, I mean, the first reality show that came out was really in search of. And it wasn't really a paranormal show. It was just about mysterious things all over the world. But it had one or two paranormal stories in it. And that kind of started a surge in interest into the paranormal. Well, it didn't last very long. A couple years, and then it died out. But what was the second show that created the surge? And it was about 10 years later. And in search of was like late 70s, around 78, I think.
Well, then you're probably talking right around Unsolved Mysteries? Is that what you're going with? No.
No.
Real show.
Sightings.
Oh, there you go.
Sightings.
Okay.
Remember that show?
Vaguely.
Sightings started a whole resurgence again. And Sightings actually gave it a pretty good kick. But it still didn't last long. You know, it lasted maybe 3 or 4 years, and then it kind of died out again. So it really wasn't until the plumbers came along with the Roto-Rooter truck and started doing their thing that it really exploded. And now, of course, there's roughly 30 shows on cable that have to do with various aspects of the paranormal, from UFOs to, you know, Bigfoot to cryptozoology in general to, you know, my husband is haunted, or, you know, my felonious ghost story. Or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, some of those shows kind of make you go, no.
Well, they're obviously for entertainment, and that's fine. I mean,
yeah,
I don't
still
mind when something's presented as entertainment. I have issues when something's presented as, like, factual. Like, this really happened.
Yeah.
It didn't. You know? You're just selling cornflakes. But anyway.
Well, I wish I was selling cornflakes, then I would make it some money.
At least we would have money, yeah, really. Just imagine if I was the magnate of General Mills or Kellogg. Boy. I mean, we could ride around in a four-wheeled vehicle.
A big cornflake mobile instead of the Oscar Mayer Wiener mobile.
That's right. So what do you want to talk about, Jimbo?
Well, I want to talk. Well, I've got a question here from one of the chat rooms. Is David looking for others to help reproduce some of his experiments?
You know, we're always looking for people to duplicate our work. And the reason being, in science, just because one person does an experiment and finds something, you know, nobody really cares about that. It takes, like, several people doing it and having the same findings to really lift somebody's eyebrows in science. Because, you know, those guys kind of, they live in these ivory towers, and they've already passed judgment on this field in the first place. So to get them to kind of take a second view at it, we really need to produce some viable data, and from a lot of different sources. You know, the chief argument is that, oh, well, you can never have a controlled environment. Yeah, okay, so you design your experiment to take that into account. Like, for example, if you're a marine biologist and you're making an experiment in, like, the ocean, for example, not a controlled environment either. Science is filled with uncontrolled environments to do experiments in. All the natural sciences, for example. Let's see, let's go do this experiment in this volcano crater. Controlled environment? Not hardly. So that's really an invalid argument. You design your experiments based on it, and then you get a lot of people say, well, you don't have a base reading. Well, you establish a base reading. If there's no activity and you have a set of readings, well, that's your base reading. If suddenly you have activity and those base readings go hilter-skelter, well, you're seeing a change in state. You're seeing a change in the data. This isn't a precise science like physics, and not that physics is all that precise, but it's not like mathematics. But it is a science much like meteorology, where you're dealing with variables, and you're measuring the rate of change, or the percentage of change, or the ratio of change. And that's pretty much what we're doing here. So when other people reproduce some of the things that we do, and they come up with the same conclusion and say, hey, you know, we got the same thing you did, that's very heartening, because it tells us, hey, we're not stupid, or, you know, we didn't suffer too badly from the 2x4 that fell on our head. We're literally onto something here, and so we need to keep following this trail. So, you know, that's the whole thing. I mean, when other people do reproduce our work, then it makes our data stronger. So, yeah, absolutely, we do love for people to reproduce our work. And we love for people to find out if we're not right, or if they find something different. The whole idea is to get to the truth, not to pat each other on the back and say, you know, I knew this all along, or, you know, this is that, or whatever. The idea is to find out really what's going on, you know, not what we think is going on, but what's really going on. I mean, you know, we have preconceived notions. Well, those have changed over the last, I'd say, 5 years pretty dramatically for me personally. You know, what I thought was going on is nothing like what it looks like is going on. So we have to keep an open mind. We have to remain objective, and we have to avoid the pitfalls of saying, you know, this is absolute. You know, this is absolute. This is this. This is black. This is white. And there's no black and white. There's just a lot of gray.
How appropriate. No, I guess I probably should reset here in case somebody doesn't recognize your voice because you're a little under the weather. My guest tonight is David Rowntree. This is the Mauer Report. Like I was author of, well, you probably hear it every week here, the author of Paranormal Technologies, Understanding the Science of Ghost Hunting. I hear it every week. See, that's why I'm really good at getting it out there. So when the new book comes out.
Did I write that? Yeah, I think I did write that.
And when the new book comes out, guess what you're going to have to do? You're going to have to sit down and cut another one of those for me so I can squeeze it in the end.
Oh, my co-author, Robbie, right, he picks the title, Careful What You Wish For. Now, is that like a mouthful?
Well,
you know, hi, this is Dave Rowntree, and I wrote Careful What You Wish For.
Need some, like, dramatic music in the background. Be careful what you wish for. Blah, blah, blah.
So it's kind of a little tongue twister, so you can't say it real, real fast, or you make embarrassing sounds. So.
Yeah, it is kind of a tongue twister, but so is the other one.
Well, the other one is meant to be, like, you know, impressive, you know, scientific. Anyway.
Well, it is more
normal technology.
Well, it is scientific, though.
Well, I tried to keep
more so than some of the crap that's out there, I guess.
Right. I tried to keep it very scientific, and the thing is, I tried to write it at two levels. I tried to write it to where a scientist could relate to it, but I also tried to write it so that a plumber could relate to it, or an electrician, or a banker.
Or a radio show host.
Even a radio show host. I'm not sure I made it, though, with that being successful. But
no, I got it.
Try.
Well, most of it. I'll be honest.
Well, the idea is to give people enough information and to arm them with questions. And since I put the book out 2 years ago, I have logged about 10,000 emails with very specific questions from people who have read it. So that's a good one.
That's a pretty good rate of return, though.
It's making people think. And if I can make people think about what they're doing a little differently, man, I've done my job. I can't change the world or alter people's opinions or anything else. But if I give them enough stuff to throw in there to give them a little shimmer of doubt about something they're doing and make them look at it a little differently, that's a good thing.
Yeah. The thing that fascinates me, I mean, there's a lot of fascinating points in your book, but the thing that kind of gripped my mind was space weather. We were talking a little bit about the space junk before we got on here, too.
Yeah.
But outside your bubble, so to speak, again, we were talking about that a little bit. You know, you're so wrapped in this present moment. You know, you got the thunderstorm going on outside, or, of course, being northwestern Pennsylvania, snow, as it may be. And you forget there's so much more that goes into it than that. So I guess I'm trying to find a question in there, but
I kind of know where you're going with it.
Yeah.
The idea is that what we're dealing with is like a big onion. There's a whole lot of layers to it, and right now people are only looking at one or two layers and making judgment calls based on one or two layers of a 35-layered onion. And the idea is that we're ignoring a whole lot of stuff that may be a factor. And then again, it may not be a factor, but the thing is we're ignoring it, so we don't know. So you have to kind of take everything in the mix that is affecting the environment, because what we're literally doing is we're measuring environmental changes, and environmental changes that we don't have an explanation for or a readily available explanation for. So in doing that, you have to look at every conceivable thing that could alter the environment. And that's space weather is one that people post on their website, but I'm not sure too many people understand really what they're posting, you know, what that means. You know, how many people really know what the X-ray gamma satellite is really telling you? Or,
I've seen it on hundreds of websites, and I'm still not sure. So,
you know, there's things like solar wind. You know, well, did the sun eat a big burrito? No. What happens is the sun is emitting energy at a constant rate. Sometimes it speeds up. The whole concept from science fiction of building a huge solar sail to power a spaceship through space using solar radiation is kind of the idea of solar wind. Solar wind is a pressure, creates a pressure of energy that a properly designed sail would literally trap like wind and move a spaceship across space. Well, it also buffets the heck out of Earth, and I don't mean Jimmy either. And the whole thing is that that energy buffeting the Earth energizes the upper atmosphere, and we have things like aurora borealis activity, things of that nature. Now, if it's affecting and ionizing the upper atmosphere, it's also affecting the rest of the atmosphere in some way or another. And the idea is to look for correlations. What we've been doing over the past 30 probably years is looking for correlations in space weather signatures and space weather activity and paranormal activity. And what we found is as space weather intensifies, so does paranormal activity. And the early theories about that were, oh, the spirits are lending energy from available energy, and that's what creates cold spots, and, you know, they're getting that energy from space weather and that sort of thing. Well, it made sense at the time, but 20 years later, it doesn't make any sense at all, because we're knowing now that space weather is affecting the Earth virtually right to its core. So there's more to it than that. We also know that cold spots aren't created by, you know, spirits drawing energy from the environment to manifest. Cold spots are generally created by temperature differentials created by a difference in atmosphere, which I think is wormhole formation. Tom Fusco thinks it's, you know, a bubble that's being created, a multidimensional bubble in space-time, or the localized bending of space-time. But either way, it's certainly not definitively a spirit drawing energy from the environment to manifest. It is something that is being created that creates the condition that allows these things to manifest. And I think that's an important differential and an important conclusion to draw. It makes it a little less mysterious and a lot more scientific. You know, I don't believe in the magic mumbo-jumbo of it. I think behind everything there's a solid scientific explanation, even magic as far as that goes.
Yeah. Well, we hope so.
Well, I mean, if you look at magic, the whole thing behind magic is people using their personal intent to affect the environment. Well, that's a big mysterious thing until you read some of the things that they did at the peer research lab at Princeton University, where they had people literally using their intent to artificially manipulate mechanical counters located in various parts of the world. And they were able to do it, and they were able to do it with a pretty high percentage rate. So that's indicative that there's a lot more power with the human mind and the human intent than we're willing to give it credit for. So again, there's a lot of things in play here that aren't taken into consideration when people draw their conclusions. Now, I'm not saying that there's no such thing as a ghost. I'm saying, to the contrary, what we need to do is define that word ghost.
Yeah, I always ask people that, because you see people looking for shadow figures and orbs and EVPs. I mean, it doesn't jive in my mind how one thing can be so many different things at the same time.
Absolutely. Anton's giving me a hard time in the chat room here.
He's allowed. I can take him out if you prefer.
No. He says the question, he says, can't the entrance formation of a wormhole be vectored as the opening of a bubble? It can kind of, but it's more like a tube funneling out. And this tube is more like a long undulating, think of a huge flexible straw that's flexible along its entire length, like a garden hose. And when it flexes, it attaches itself to one specific spot in space-time, and then the other end, for a brief period of time, attached itself to another place in space-time that may be, you know, 4,000 light-years away or an adjacent universe altogether. And for a period of time, It's a 10-minute walk from one reality to the other. And then all of a sudden it collapses and it's all over. And you never know if it will ever reconnect again. In paranormal activity, we think that these things are reconnecting over and over again. I tend to think it's associated with births and deaths. I think that the consciousness enters into the body through a wormhole, and I think it leaves the body through a wormhole. I think it goes back to where it came from, goes into the big cauldron of souls, so to speak, and then gets spit out again at another time with various other energies associated with it. And for the most part, we lack the memory of any previous engagements. However, there are many cases of those who either do remember it or the memories are brought out through hypnosis. So I think there's like a natural safety thing built in that prevents us from remembering these past existences. Because could you imagine going through the world a day and remembering, say you had 10 past lives, could you imagine going through the world remembering all 10 of your past lives and trying to function?
Well, it'd always be stumbling, because like right now we're talking through wires, through, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, imagine, you know, I can't walk in front of a deli, you know, my last life I was killed by a piano falling from the 8th floor, landing on my head while I was standing in line in front of a deli. I can't go there, you know. I mean, we would go crazy trying to second guess our life, and we wouldn't live it. So I think there's built-in safeties to keep us from being absolutely aware of anything we've done in the past. But then we do have those moments where some people call them creative déjà vu, where we'll go to a place and the place is totally familiar to us.
Oh, that's the worst.
And we know we've never been there before in our life, but we're able to like go and put our hand directly on something there that we shouldn't know is there, and there it is. Or look underneath a rock and find something you know is there, or find a drawer or a secret compartment somewhere, and you do it, and you have no idea why or how you knew that information. And it's because I think at some point in the past you were there before doing something else, and that was just a tidbit, a nugget of that past existence manifesting itself to you. So that's kind of, what's Anton saying in there? The whole or part of the tube exists in the same space-time. Well, there's only one space-time. The difference is what does it all entail? Some people believe that space-time is only a reality in our universe, but those same people think that all there is our universe. Well, what if our universe is in a big pot of goo that has 100,000 universes in it? Just like we have several million galaxies in our universe, what if there are several million universes in the omniverse or in the multiverse? And then there's 3 or 4 million multiverses in an omniverse, you know. I mean, the thing that we find is everything is built on the tiniest structure. As we go out from the subatomic particles to the atom to the molecule, the patterns, the geometric patterns continue to be the same as you go from the micro to the macro. There's no reason to believe that it's no different when you go to the super macro.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. I'll reset now that you're hacking your lung out again. You got to keep one of those, though. I don't want you becoming a ghost on air. I mean, of course, if you have to do it on a show, I guess I would prefer it would be mine. But
you know, they gave me this cough medicine, and I've coughed more since I started taking it than I did before.
My guest tonight is David Roundtree here on the Mallard Report, author, lecturer, paranormal investigator. That's the other thing you say in my my intro. See, I was trying to recall that all from having it drubbed in my memory every week as I play that for you. Well, I guess I play it for me, play it for you. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know who it benefits more, but
it's all an elephant. I mean, irrelevant. So.
I probably sold at least I've sold one copy of your book because I bought it. So
exactly, there you go. And you know what? Just keep those checks coming in. Like we were saying, you were saying, boy, I wish I had a dollar for everyone who said they were coming. And I said, I just wish I had a dollar for everyone.
That's the difference between me and you. I just wish I had a dollar for everybody that said they were coming. Cause I wouldn't be close to your pile
like
of money.
I like to think in a more grander scheme.
Yeah.
It's kind of like those TV evangelists. Thank you, brother. Now, if each and every one of you out there could just send in $1 to this address, you know?
Yeah, I'll solve all your debt problems if you send me 200. I see John Tenney talking about it. If you send me $250, I'll solve all your debt problems. The Lord will take care of you.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I'll just Tim Rancorn. What I need is a shot of whiskey. That would be better than this cough medicine.
Probably.
There's a whole thing about time. You know, there people were having a little debate in the chat room now about time and the relevancy of time, and time's a man-made thing and all this stuff. Time is a cool thing. It's so cool that we really don't understand it very well. But think of this. If a wormhole can connect two places in space-time, what that really means is it can connect two places in space, or two places in time, or two places in space and time. Now, if you think about that, what would a residual haunt be? It would be a wormhole creating a connection between here and now, while you're standing there dumbfounded staring across the field at Gettysburg, and that warm summer morning in 1863 when all hell broke loose on the battlefield. And what you're literally seeing is a moment in history.
Yeah. That's strange
that's
to think
why,
about.
But and that's why it doesn't react to you. Or if you're sitting in a house and this guy walks by and he reaches up and there's nothing there, but he acts like he's taking something off a shelf. He puts it down, and it's floating in the air where there's nothing, you know. Maybe there was a table there 100 years ago, or maybe there was a cabinet there 100 years ago. And maybe you're just kind of looking at something historical taking place, and he's in his real world, really alive, doing his thing. And you're just kind of watching it. I mean, that's what a wormhole can do. And, yeah, a lot of people don't get what space-time is, including a lot of physicists don't get what space-time is. But space-time is a concept. It's a concept that involves an occupying area, you know, space. What is space? You know, I get into all these arguments with these philosophers about what space is. Space doesn't exist. I says, yeah, there's space between your ears. Space is an area, a cross-section. It could be, you know, 1 square inch. It could be 100 million square light years. Space is space. It's an area. Time is duration, distance. The amount of distance something can travel at a fixed rate. That's what time is. If I'm going to drive my car from here to New York City, the mileage says it should take me about 48 minutes. The reality is it's about a 2.5 hour fight, complete with cursing, gunshots, you know, various assorted criminal activity.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, what's reality on that? Because that's not 48
exactly.
minutes into that city.
But you could take that same distance and put it out on a country road, and you could do it in 28 minutes, you know, or whatever. So,
well, you could probably do it faster than 28 minutes, you know. No.
Well, depending on how good a car you had. You know. But the idea is so because speed isn't constant, or depending on what you're using as your constant may not be that constant. For example, the speed of light isn't constant. Assuming that the speed of light is 186,000 miles per second is assuming that it's traveling through a vacuum with no other matter or gas in the way. Any of those things getting in the way will slow down the speed of light because light will slow down as it goes into a medium. So we're taking a lot of things that have minute differences in speed. But the end result is that we don't even need to do that. We can say, well, you know, it's going to take 45 minutes because it's rush hour. You know, that's time. And it's not that we created it. It's a reality of movement. If the Earth is moving in space, how much time or duration does it take for it to make a complete orbit around the sun? Well, we know it's 364 days and 47 minutes and all this stuff, right? So, or how long does it take it to make a complete rotation on its axis? Now, even though the definition of time is man-made, the concept has always been around as long as there's been a dynamic universe. And the reason being is because as long as there's movement, there is time. Because with movement, there is a change in location in space. So that's kind of the elementary school Reader's Digest quick version of what time really is. And how to kill it senselessly, I just demonstrated.
You did a great job of it. That's okay. That's the point, though. You're allowed to talk. I'm not one of those guys that's going to step all over you, and you know that. So.
Well, I mean, you know, the idea, I think, is to talk about different things. You know, every time we do an interview, it's always different.
That's the goal.
And that's the cool part about it is, you know, I don't like to talk about the same stuff all the time. Although I kind of, you know, secretly, you know, manipulated into the conversation at some point along the way, just because that's fun.
Well, you've got to have some consistency. You've got to promote
right.
the book and Spirit
exactly.
Lab.
Exactly.
And where'd it go? Spininvestigations.org.
Spininvestigations.org.
There you go.
Spininvestigations.org. And because the original organization that used this website was called Skylands Paranormal Investigations, because we live in the Skylands section of New Jersey. But because of a really vitriolic and vicious troll attack prior to me writing the book, I took the organization down. It became New Jersey Paranormal Research or Resource Group, and then something that had been underground for many, many years since '93, the Spirit Lab, took its place on the website. And people said, well, why didn't you change the website name? And I said, because I had about 10,000 hits a day coming through the site. Why would I throw those away?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I was scrolling down through it looking for anything that I wanted to mention, and there's all kinds of good stuff there. And
mm-hmm.
down here on the bottom, I've got this little hit counter that has 1 million little hits on this webpage. So.
Yeah. I mean, why would I throw that away?
Yeah, it got me there.
You know, people.
There we go.
It just proves that you don't need a catchy website title to get traffic to your site. You need to have good information that people want.
Yeah.
And it'll get people, if you know, if your website's name is, you know, www.donkeydung.com, if it's got good information, people will find it. So, actually, that's kind of a good name. I think I'm going to change my website.
I was going to say, you better go grab that right now before somebody else does.
I'm sure that's been overused like crazy. But, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I started using that. And the other kind of cool thing is that spininvestigations.com is a private investigation agency.
Ah.
And I always thought that was kind of cool because I wonder how many people trying to check up on their husbands or wives cheating on them came to my website. Or how many people looking for ghost information or paranormal research went to their website. Someday I'd like to find out the answer to that question.
Well, I'm sure there's a few at least.
Oh, yeah. You know, somebody had to have, you know, one night, what was our website again? What was it? That I looked like an E. You know? And all of a sudden, you know, oh, wow, man. I want to find my old lady at the No-Tell Motel. And I'm reading about something about quantum mechanics. I mean, you know, what is that?
Yeah.
I just want to be a fly on the wall when that happens someday.
But there's a link there for the book, and then September, you've got an event coming up that we might want to talk about.
Oh, my God, man. I have so many events, but that one is a very vital event.
Well, I know. That's what I'm saying. There might be that. We might want to talk about that one. I mean, I don't know. That's up to you.
Yeah. No, I mean, that we've already made an announcement about that and everything. But the idea is that September 7th is we will be at the ParaFest 2013 at the Sands Resort in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, Casino and Resort. It's going to probably be the hugest paranormal festival that the East Coast has ever witnessed. It's going to have everything from raffling off a Harley-Davidson to a Hearst car show where people bring their favorite hearses and, you know, I mean, it's just, they're going to auction off two thermal imaging cameras. But the 7th of September, during the VIP dinner, Tracy and I will be getting married.
Yay!
All of our friends are in the paranormal, so we just thought it would be very cool to do it at a paranormal event so all of our friends could be there. And so there you go.
There you are.
It's going to be a huge, huge event. And the Sands is like a beautiful facility. Oh, my God. They have a whole series of, like, these designer outlet shops, fantastic food at the restaurant, got a great bar, and there's gambling. Did I say that? There's gambling. So I'm hoping that, you know, Tracy can run down to the casino and make enough money for a nice honeymoon for us.
I was going to say, is there a honeymoon plan? That was going to be my next question.
Yeah. So go down there, and she'll be playing roulette. And making us a nice nest egg. You know. but we're not saying where we're going on our honeymoon.
Well,
you're leaving
Pennsylvania, New Jersey, right? You're going to go somewhere.
Yeah, we're going to go somewhere out of the area.
Okay. Out of the zip code, so to speak. I guess that's area code I was looking for. I killed my own joke.
Oh, yeah. Well, we got one of the things that is being done for us is a customized wedding cake. And this person who's doing it is a wedding cake designer. And
Wait, there is such a thing?
No, these people are specialized in designing and cooking and decorating wedding cakes. And this woman is like a wedding cake designer. And the organizers of the event at the Sands are behind it, you know.
Well, that's good.
They arranged it as like a nice little present for us.
Well, that's nice.
And it was very nice. And you know, I've known, you know, Scott and Gearhart for quite a while, and I think it's Karen Versace who's involved in it. And you know what? I'm helping them get people to come, you know, guests to come to it. I'm contacting Tracy's, you know, contacting people. Getting people to come to it. We're trying now to get some Bigfoot researchers there so that we're covering, you know, all the different aspects of the paranormal. It's not just about ghosts.
Yeah.
It's crypto people.
Looks like a great event from everything I've seen so far.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And this is going to be, I mean, a cast of thousands, you know, pretty much. I mean, every time I go to the site, there's like five or six new people there. But there's also going to be investigation groups presenting. It's not just about the big names and the stars that will be there. There's going to be a lot of just like down in the trenches investigators sharing what they do and sharing how they work. So it's going to be a great experience on so many levels that, you know, we just felt like it was the show to do it at. And so far everything is going really well. And I think it's going to be a fantastic show. Now, our lives are kind of crazy because September, right after that, on the 27th, 28th, and 29th, we're doing a show in Delaware, the Delaware Paranormal Convention. Let me go back. August, we're doing a show at the beginning of the month that I'm not allowed to divulge yet. But we're also doing the 16th, 17th, and 18th, the Midwest Scientific Paranormal Convention. And then we don't have a whole lot going on. Lower Catskills Paracon, May 3rd, 4th, and possibly the 5th will be a hangover recovery day. April, we have nothing.
Wow.
Yet.
If you got an event
March,
in April, get on it.
Well, March, we have a Paranormal Unity Fest in Texas. We have the final interview of the three we're doing with you on the 5th.
That's right.
But March is going to be a hell month for us because that's probably going to be the month that we move the rest of Tracy's stuff from Texas to New Jersey. We just got a lot of stuff going on down in the Texas area that month. So you're the only radio show we're doing in March, and we're not booking anything else in March that we don't already have booked. So Paranormal Unity Fest and your interview are the only things we're booking in March because we're not going to be available.
Well, that's good news for me. If you want to hear David in March.
Yeah. And this is, that's exactly right. Just like January, right? I've got an interview tonight, tomorrow night, the 10th, the 11th, the 12th, the 13th. The 13th isn't. The 16th, the 17th, the 20th, the 22nd, and the 28th. That's January. Some of them are me. Some of them are Tracy and I. And Tracy may even have interviews. I don't even know yet. February, we've got, you know, you on the 5th. We've got the 10th, the 18th, and the 19th already booked. And it's amazing. It's like we're booking the next month. Like right now, we're booking February because we already booked January and December. Yep.
Oh, yeah, so, I know. That's why I try to book out. People ask me why. Like right now, I'm booking for June.
Oh, yeah, you really do if you're doing your own show.
Yeah, yeah. If you want somebody that like you or somebody else, you've got to get them early and get that date slammed in their book because if not, you'll lose. I mean, I couldn't wait till yesterday and say, hey, David, you want to come on?
Yeah. No, I know. Well, you'd have been out of luck probably.
Yeah, well, you couldn't have found you. You would have been laid up in bed.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, people don't realize it. I have people call me and they go, God, we'd love to have you on our show. Next Tuesday the 18th is available. Do you think you could show up? And it's like, I can't show up any this month because I'm booked, but I am taking dates in February. And people are like, really? And I'm like, oh, yeah. It's like, you know, it's like, and I have, and Tracy and I, God bless Tracy, she helps me keep up with this stuff. Because I tell you, I get it all in my main calendar, and that stays pretty up to date. But then I've got a web calendar on my page, on my website.
Yeah.
And that generally is lagging, and I have to go in there. Like right now, I have to go in there and update the public calendar that's in the website because there's a lot of stuff that's missing in there. And a lot of people use that to book me. They'll go in there and say, oh, he's not doing anything on the 15th, you know. And then they'll call me, and I'm going, oh, God, you know, I am doing something on the 15th. I just forgot to put it in there. So,
you need a data, you know, entry clerk.
Yeah, it's getting to the point where you need somebody full-time just to manage the web stuff, you know.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Oh, it's crazy. And then the whole thing of trying to do a radio show in the middle of all that and get guests, and no.
Well, I'm sure you probably have an easier time getting guests than I do.
I just get people I want to talk to or I think they have interesting stories, and I call them up and I go, hey, you know, would you mind coming on? And they go, oh, no, great, man. So, it's easier for me because, for one thing, I pick people that aren't normally guests. I mean, some of them are, and some of them are pretty famous and do a lot, do the whole circuit. But I also like to bring people that I know that haven't had a lot of radio experience or exposure, but they've got a really interesting story, or they're doing interesting work, or they're doing something that normally would not get picked up by a talk show. So Tracy and I both, we would bring people in that, you know, was really under a lot of people's radar, but they had a great, you know, story to tell. And I think it's important to get those stories out.
I'm a show killer. People book me on their show, and then either I be the guest on their show, and then they cancel the show, like, immediately following.
That's happened to me before, though.
Yeah, well, I know, but
I got booked on a show, and I showed up, and it was over. And I'm sitting in the chat room by myself, and all they're doing is playing, like, archives. And I'm like, hello? Anyone here? Hello? Don't talk about being embarrassed.
That could be worse, right?
I'm not sure. That was kind of like being in the Twilight Zone.
At least it canceled on air.
Well, that's true.
I've had a guest do that to me before. No, I can't do it right now. Talk to you later.
Yeah, really.
What?
I think the worst experience I had was it was a husband and wife co-host. This has been several years ago. And they worked as janitors at a hospital.
Okay.
That was like their jobs.
Right.
And, you know, to say they didn't have any radio skills or interview skills would be kind. But they didn't even, they didn't do any research on me. They did no research on the book. The questions they asked were kind of childlike in nature. And it was just a bad situation. So what I always do when that happens is I just start talking and I don't let them speak. And I use up the whole hour, you know. And they get maybe two words in the whole time, and they'll say, oh, but wait, what about, oh, wait a minute, this is really important. Never mind that, this is really important. I'll just keep talking. And then I'll look and I'll go, oh, my gosh, look at the time. I'm sorry I took up all the time on your show, and it'll be like 30 seconds left. And I'll go, oh, God, I'm just so sorry I took up all the time on your show. But, you know, I get to talking, and I just can't shut up, you know. I just can't stop. And I managed to cover like 18 topics in that 1 hour period, where before it was like, Sue, what's your favorite color?
I'm guessing blue, by the way, just for the record.
Blue and black, pretty good. You know, the color of bruising, that's my favorite color.
Okay. One last reset here. My guest tonight is David Roundtree. I wanted to ask him, I've asked him this before, but I'm going to ask him again because I just got to ask him again. What's your advice for somebody getting into the field, the paranormal investigation field?
Oh, God. I believe no one. That's probably the best thing. Believe no one. Assume that everyone that's telling you something is lying through their teeth. That's the first lesson. The second thing I can tell them is to read. Read everything. Read everything you can get your hands on. Hold on. Got to cough up a lung. Bear with me. Okay, I'm back. It wasn't too bad. Read. And don't just read the stuff that's written today. Read the stuff that was written 30 years ago. Read stuff that was, you know, it's funny. Back when Hans Holzer was doing his research, a lot of people don't remember. He had a witch that accompanied him. Do you remember that?
No.
Most people have forgotten it. Her name was Sybil Leek. And he would hypnotize her, and she would go into a trance, and she would read and channel like a medium does. Hmm. And to me, that is so fascinating, because now we call them sensitives or mediums or psychic mediums or psychic medium empaths or empaths. You know, we have all these real fancy names for it.
But Dave, we only have about 8 minutes left. You got to stop with the title game.
Oh, I know. I can't help it, though. But she was just a witch, you know. He used this witch, Sybil Leek. And everyone remembers Hans Holzer, but almost no one remembers Sybil Leek. And she put out several books. I mean, in her day, she was very famous. She was a very famous person. And she looked like a witch. And like a scary, you know, like a crone, you know, witch. But she was very good at the information that she got. So read everything you can get your hands on, and then put everything into perspective and put everything into context and look for patterns in what you read before you set foot in the first reportedly haunted space that you go to, so that you've got an idea of the history of the whole concept of investigating the paranormal, where it came from and what it's developed into. The second thing is understand the equipment you use. If you only have a camera, you know, or a recorder, understand intimately how both of them work. Understand how you can create effects with it accidentally, play around with it, understand what lens flare is. Be an expert at your individual piece of equipment, even if it's only a couple of things. And if you can't be an expert in it, at least read everything you can find out about what you have and try to understand the concept of photography or videography and the principles behind it. With the Internet today, anyone can do it. You can read up on any subject. And, you know, arm yourself with knowledge. And then when you go in with an open mind, and yet be objective. Be from Missouri. You know, it has to show you. It has to show you that it's something that can't be explained. It can't be something that you think, oh, my God, that's a ghost. You have to go in and debunk everything that you saw, try to recreate it, and make sure that you saw something that was really unexplainable. Don't believe anything anyone tells you. Don't let someone see something and tell you it was something else. Be your own mind. Make up your own mind, and don't jump to conclusions. And I think if you can adhere to a good portion of that, you'll turn into a pretty decent paranormal investigator.
That's what I'm talking about, David. See, you did pretty good there. I know, I told you I've asked you that before, but It's good to...
Well, my definition and advice gets better with age. You know, I meet some people each year in the field, and I see some pretty comical things. And they make an impression on me, and I try to incorporate those things in part of the sagely advice, you know, at the end of an interview kind of thing. Because if you notice that my explanation this time was a little bit different than the last time you asked that question. And it's because I've learned along the way. I've learned that there's some things that are way more important than other things. Way more important than other things.
It is.
And as I get wiser, I realize that some of the things I thought important aren't really all that important. You know, there's other things that are more important than that. The personal experience and understanding and analyzing yourself in the environment is probably the most important thing you can do when you're doing an investigation. But you've got to avoid overanalyzing yourself. That'll get you in trouble, too.
Well, I want to give you an opportunity here. You know, we're winding down here, obviously, in a hurry.
Yep.
You know what to do here. You know what this is all about. This is all about a little self-promotion time. Since I didn't make you do it earlier, I'm going to make you do it now.
Well, like I say, all the information, all of our work is at spinvestigations.org. If you can't remember that, just Google David, RONPREE, and paranormal, and you can find out the stuff that we're working on. One of the latest neat things we're doing is research into fibromyalgia.
Which is why I'm going to have you and Tracy on together to talk about that coming up.
That's right. That'll be the subject of a future show. The idea is to get to know me and to get to know her in her own interview and to put us together and talk about our work. So I'm just going to mention it. But what we've got and what we've done is posted on the website. We also have links to purchasing the book. We have an area there on quantum mechanics for people that don't understand quantum mechanics, and a lot of other stuff. So it's just chock full of information. And since we've got about 3 minutes, I'll hand the ball back to you, Jim.
Well, I've got a minute. I've got an outro that I play. I mean, 2 minutes. I've got an outro that I play, and, you know,
well,
I have some fun with life.
Well, I've never really played an outro, but I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
Yeah, the fun part of producing your own show, though.
Yeah, well, there you go.
The technical
end of things. You can pretty much do what you want, right?
Yeah. That's why I don't take breaks.
There you go.
Why would I take a break during this interview? Could somebody explain that to me?
If you were putting in an ad for someone who was actually giving you cash money.
That's the only reason I'd do it. And, hey, I'll do it. I'll stop David Roundtree cold in his tracks and say, I've got to play this to make myself some money.
That's exactly right. You know, this guy paid me $20 to play this, and I'm playing it, dang it. You know?
Other than that, no, it's not happening.
I like to wake up every morning with a nice hot Dickens cider. You ever hear that commercial?
No.
Dickens cider. Say that fast, and you get in a lot of trouble with the FCC.
That's another reason.
Anyway,
I love the internet radio. That's another reason that
you can say what you want.
That's right.
Put in reason.
Well, even without reason, all they can do
that's
is change
true.
You from any network, and then you can go find another one.
Yeah, and then what gets you fired will get you hired somewhere else.
That's true. That's Howard Stern.
But, yeah, look at that. Shock Jock Central.
That's right.
Hey, it was fun tonight.
It was?
It was a little different, and it was kind of cool and revealing and educational, and that's the most you can ask for.
All right. Well, hang out with me for a minute while I play this, and I'll talk to you off air.
Okay.
Well, before we flip that on-air sign to the off position, a quick reminder. For all things about the report, previews, and reviews, go to www.mallard.com. That's www.mallard.com. And if you want to read more about my team, or Jim's team, or just keep up to date on the report, visit italkparanormal.com. That's italkparanormal.com. Good night.
This is Thomas Fresco, author of the book Behind the Cosmic Veil, A New Vision of Reality, and you are listening to The Mallard Report.
Hey, everybody, it's The Mallard Report.
Mallory.